So today we are here with a special guest. She's definitely someone who I've worked with for a long time, and I just so appreciate the work that she does. Krista Van Einderstein is here. She's an occupational therapist and now really pursuing her passion of being an ADHD coach. So we just thought it would be great today if we could, put out our first podcast talking about ADHD and really just the importance of the coaching aspect of that. So maybe we can just start off by you telling us a little bit about yourself, being an occupational therapist and now an ADHD coach.
Well, so as an occupational therapist, I really got into working with kids and teens with ADHD as well as other self-regulation challenges, autism, anxiety, learning disabilities. And so I found I really enjoyed specializing in that area. And I know a lot of people might not even be sure what occupational therapy is, so I always want to make sure I explain that too, because it actually is quite a vast profession, and you can meet five different occupational therapists, and they may do very, very different
Yeah,
things.
that's so true. That's so true. I know even just in working with you know, I've learned so much more about, this area of specialty. So yes, maybe clarify that.
So occupational therapy as a whole, the idea is that we're supporting clients with being better able to do daily activities. And that's the word occupation, is this idea occupations is activities. So my work as an occupational therapist with kids and teens in schools, which is where I started, is about helping kids and teens to do all their daily activities at school that they need to do. So that can involve so many different things. It involves focus, it involves the ability to regulate your emotions. It involves the ability to sit in the desk, do your writing activities, socially engage with the teacher as well as other kids, just even following the routines. And so we're really trained to analyze how people do activities to really find out, what's supporting them, what's getting in their way, and what's needed. And that can be about skill development, and it also can be about building in strategies and supports. So my work then with students in schools was a lot about just figuring out what's getting in the way. And I've done lots of work outside of schools as well. But yeah, so that's it's so that's how my OT work focuses. I guess that's a good place to a good way to say it.
So how did you then kind of make this transition from occupational therapist and then, really get into the ADHD coaching piece?
And I often like to say, like, I still feel like I'm an occupational therapist first. And the coaching's just been a nice add-on. But yeah, it was when I started hearing, even just learning more and more about ADHD and then starting to hear about this idea of ADHD coaches, I just started looking into it, and the more I looked into it, the more it seemed like it was very similar to what I was already doing. And it seemed like it could be a good fit. And so then as I started the training, I found that it ended up being that, well, actually, there were some important differences, because what I like about the coaching is so much about enabling people to figure things out on their own. Whereas as an occupational therapist, you're very quick to give information and strategies. And so what I liked about now being an ADHD coach as well is I can kind of have both hats. And so I can be giving information and strategies, but then also kind of move into the coaching where I'm really empowering the client to figure out, well, what's actually going to work the best for them in their world, because they're the expert on themselves and what their daily life looks like.
Yeah, and I think, just in the work that you do, me being a psychologist and you and I have certainly shared years of working in schools, there's just a lot of misperceptions that go with ADHD. And I think maybe we could just spend some time, talking about your experience in working with kids, adolescents and adults too. Where do those misperceptions come from? And maybe, how does that impact the kids, teens, adults that you work with?
The more the more I learn about ADHD, the more you just see how there is so much misinformation and misunderstanding about what it is. But, you know, I think that all stems back to even the name itself. Like, ADHD stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, which actually doesn't tell you anything about really what ADHD is. So
That's so true.
that's
That's so
part of the
true.
problem, is just the name itself. And there's been lots of discussion among the experts about changing the name, and maybe that will happen because the name has changed through the years, and it used to be worse. I think it used to be minimal brain dysfunction. So I think we've come a long way, you know, but still, this isn't the right name.
Right. And so I think maybe what you're saying is the tendency is that we focus either more on the hyper part of ADHD and just, you know, for those who aren't trained to diagnose it, you know, when they're looking at kids or adults, they kind of look at, okay, are they hyper? And that's not really the case at all, is it?
And so definitely that's the hyperactivity part that throws people off, because then people have this vision in their head of a hyperactive child bouncing around the room, which is really just part of what you might see with ADHD. You know, sort of, I think the understanding is that there's the hyperactive component of almost like there's just lots of energy. And so that can look different for different people. Like it can, for some people, it is physical energy and lots of movement, but sometimes it can be very mental. It can be even a way of mental hyperactivity. But the way I look at the whole term and the way now I describe it to people is that it really is about attention control challenges, because it's not really an attention deficit, which is also throws people off, because people will think, well, no, like I can focus or my child can focus, so it's not an attention deficit. But no, like when you're really talking about this idea of ADHD, it's actually attention control. It's just not being able to put your focus on what you need to whenever you need to. Like people with ADHD tend to have really great focus for some things and then not as good a focus for other things, and they don't seem to be able to have the control to just make themselves focus, and then they can actually get too focused on other things, so it's just not having the control.
Right. And when I know just over the last year, you've spent a lot of time really talking about the brain's role with ADHD. You know, and again, I think, you know, in previous years, we're looking more at the behavior, you know, so we see the actions of these kids, or we see their impulsivity, or we see that, you know, they don't make maybe good decisions, or there's that focus piece. But I think even just talking with you over the last year, what you've really brought to my attention is that there's more going on, right? So, you know, the brain has a huge part to play in this, of course. You know, of course it does. But again, just in everyday life, you know, we don't kind of stop and think and be mindful of, you know, what is the role of the brain in ADHD? So maybe you can just tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, what you're fascinated with the brain, and maybe how you deliver that to your clients, how you educate them on the importance of understanding how the brain works and how it plays a part in ADHD.
Yeah, well, and what's been nice is that there's more and more information coming out all the time. You know, overall, you know, everyone's still learning so much about the brain, and so, you know, that information still is coming. But even over, I think it was in 2016, 2017, a really great research study was done about the ADHD brain and what and they were looking at people with ADHD and people without ADHD, people from 4 years old to people in their 90s. And really it showed that the main difference for all the people with ADHD is it's in sort of the lower parts of the brain. It's in the parts of the brain where emotions are regulated, and it's the part of the brain where motivation and certain brain chemicals like dopamine are being regulated, and that's what's different. And so that can look different. And so it's not just a behavior. There can be behaviors, but there can be all different sorts of things and how that looks. But really, what that means is it's almost like the ADHD brain is, in a way, understimulated. That it's not that there isn't dopamine, because there is, but it's just something about the mechanisms that isn't working the same as for people without ADHD. And so then Yeah, it's almost like then people with ADHD, then their brain may not be stimulated the same way someone without ADHD may be, that then there's almost like they're looking for stimulation a lot of the time. And it's almost like this idea of energy and brain. I sometimes use the idea of brain fuel. So it's this idea that someone with ADHD is kind of looking for stimulation and looking for something to energize their brain, which can be kind of confusing when you think, well, if you're thinking of the hyperactive kind of child, you're thinking, well, they've got tons of energy. But what it is actually that they don't have enough energy to put the brakes on. It's the
Interesting.
idea that, you need to have sort of the fuel and the energy to put the brakes on and stop yourself from following all those impulses that might be there.
And so how would a child or an adult know that they're in that mode of, looking for stimulation?
Yeah, and
Like, how do you bring that awareness to them?
well, and it always, it depends a lot on the child, the teen, or the adult, on kind of where they're at to begin with. But it's sometimes it is starting to bring in the concepts and the terms, and to even start point figuring out, well, what are signs, what for them, what are signs for them that they're completely out of brain fuel? And for some people, it could be that they're falling asleep on their desk, and for someone else it might be that they can't sit still, and for someone else it's that they're having a meltdown. And it can look different in different situations as well. So it's kind of just about, giving them that information and having them start to recognize that, and then from there start to look at, well, what are things that drain your brain fuel, because certain things will more than others, and what are things that boost it? And helping that person to figure out what that is for them, because that's where everyone's so different as well. There isn't really a set list of things that's going to work for everybody. Everyone has to figure out what's going to work for them, and also that you're not going to have a set recipe of things that are going to work every day either. You have to kind of have enough awareness within yourself to be able to do that problem solving as you need to.
Yeah, and as you were talking, that just brought me back to I really like the analogy you use of, the gas tank, that brain drain. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like, in the course of a day's events?
And again, it really depends on the person. And I'll just make reference to a couple different places where this came from. Like, it really comes from Dr. Russell Barkley's work, who's a wonderful ADHD specialist in North America, who talks a lot about executive functioning skills, and it's through his, some of his work that it kind of, got on to how he was talking about brain fuel. And then more recently, I've been looking at Dr. Stuart Shanker's work, who's a psychologist, and he doesn't necessarily specialize in ADHD, but he specializes in looking at self-regulation and what gets in the way of self-regulation. So now I find I'm really bringing all of those things into play when I'm working with clients and talking to them about this. So, and this is again with how individual it will be. So it's a lot of it is thinking about, they have to kind of recognize for themselves, like, what are some signs that they might be a little bit low brain fuel because they're struggling with getting going with things that they need to do, or even struggling with emotional reactions, and then having them, you almost do have to kind of sit and think, well, yeah, like kind of why? Like Stuart Shanker will talk about asking yourself why and why now, and it's a lot about, yeah, you got to kind of think. And he talks about this idea of stressors are the things that are draining your brain fuel, and so there can be all sorts of different things. It can be sensory sensitivities. It can be too much information or having trouble processing information. It could be the challenges of being in social situations. It can be the emotions themselves. And then, of course, with ADHD, it can be a lot of executive functioning skills. And what that is executive functioning skills are these brain-based skills that we use to do pretty much everything. Like, it's sort of like you think and you think yourself through sort of
That's right, yeah.
doing processes. So Russell Barkley will say that, ADHD really is about having impairments with that. So then that can be a lot of what's draining somebody. And this is what's so confusing with ADHD, because people will say, well, wow, you could, especially a parent might say, well, you've got no trouble getting up and going when we're going skiing today. Like, how come you can't do this when it's time to go to school? And the answer is about brain fuel, that if you think about, like, the child waking up to go to school, it's there's kind of all these different stressors or things that are draining them on those mornings. There's not this big fun thing that's coming up that in a way kind of boosts them. It's almost like the immediate reward or the immediate fun thing coming up actually boosts your brain fuel. And then you can get through things, like you get through all those different steps of getting dressed and eating. Whereas when it's school, which may not be giving you that same boost, it's a lot harder to not get distracted or to remember these steps that I have to do every day, or remember my backpack and all of that. So it's, and this is what's so tricky, is the child's not, or the, and even the adult too, they're not never making a choice. It's their brain is just sort of getting in the way sometimes. When you're low on brain fuel, your brain can be almost like a magnet to anything that's stimulating. and getting in the way of what you need to do. So that's what I've really learned, is to bring in sort of the information about ADHD and in a way that empowers people too, to also see the strengths that come with it too, because, you know, the flips, and that's why I often will say for every ADHD challenge, there's a flip side of that coin, and it actually can be a great strength. But then there is that other side of the coin. So it's like you need to have the awareness of the strengths and the challenges and what they look like, so you can kind of make the best of it all every day.
Right. Well, and I think that really leads us to, you know, I guess just as practitioners, us working in the schools and of course in our practice as well, you know, we oftentimes sit down with teachers and parents or resource. You know, even now I see a lot of companies really supporting their employees who have an ADHD diagnostic to get some coaching like you do. But I think, you know, that's kind of the interesting part, is that for them, and as for parents, when we're dealing with this every single day, you know, so we have a child who has ADHD, or we're teaching to that child, or maybe two or three children in a classroom, the tendency, I think, is, you know, how can we just get them to sit and listen and focus? And I liked what you said. It's the when and the why.
Yeah, like why and why now.
Yeah, why and why now. And so I really love that, because I think that's just a great question even for, you know, teachers to use, like, why and why now in this moment is perhaps the child behaving the way they are, or even for an adult in the workplace.
Well, and that's why, and that's Stuart Shanker's work, and definitely he's got a wonderful website and wonderful books, and that I really do use his approach in all of my work now, whether I'm working with adults and kids. It really helps to, it helps to guide my own clinical reasoning, but when I teach that, it makes a lot of sense. And it is, because it's really problem solving, and it teaches that problem solving approach. The trick is there's just a lot to it, and that's what I really like about his work, is he's really now sort of uncovering the true complexity of this, because then, you think, well, why can't you just do what you need to do? And there's sort of a self-control mindset in our world. And his approach really shows us, well, and it's tied to the newer brain science, that you just can't. There's sometimes that our brain, which is actually wired for survival, will take over, and that actually gets in the way of having the self-control you need to do. And it can just be because of different things that are overloading your system, as well as not having enough stimulation. So I'm finding that helpful to bring in. And that's when I do work with families and adults, I'm really, sort of empowering them, teaching them about that, and then helping them to see, well, how does that fit for themselves? And, you know, even with families and parents, it's just as important for the parent to be able to look at their own needs around that too.
Yeah, well, and it just really slows the whole process down. You know, the minute you said that, you know, I even felt for myself just going, wow, in that moment of dealing with a child, or even as an adult, just to be able to be asking that question. That one question just really slows down. And I think, like what you said, just really empowers that person, child, adolescent, adult, just to ask the question, right? Okay, I do have choice. And when I'm mindful that perhaps I'm overstimulated or I can't focus, just even asking that question gives you so many different directions, actually. So whether it's the actual person with ADHD or, you know, with someone working with them, I think that just really opens up a good opportunity to offer different choices versus just having one plan. You know, okay, you need to go for a walk or you need to, you know, go to the back of the class or you need to come sit by my desk or, you know, maybe adults walk to the water fountain or the to get a coffee, right? But I think just being able in that moment to ask that one question and even asking the person, it's like, wow, now you're now you have just so many other alternatives than just, you know, get up and move.
Right? Yeah. Well, yeah, because and the trick is, and this is again what makes this so challenging, is that, you know, moving could be a really helpful brain fuel boosting thing on some days, but in some days it actually might not be. Some days it actually might do the opposite. So that's where it's just not as simple. And it's unfortunate. I always think it'd be nice if there were a lot of easy answers, but there just, there isn't. So we have to just sort of figure this out step by step.
Yeah. I really like that approach because again, I think it just offers so many different opportunities to be diverse, right? And creative at the same time, you know, because kids, if they're just given the same, you know, the same way or the same alternatives every time, it's not necessarily going to work day in, day out, right?
Yeah.
And so I really like that approach. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, why the impulsivity or I guess when we see these behaviors too, we really, you know, we get frustrated easily and, you know, maybe can you just talk a little bit about what that's like for the person, you know, why it comes across as a, maybe a negative behavior or, you know, they're just impulsive. They'll say things that, you know, kind of off the cusp, but why is that?
Yeah. Well, and so now I feel like I answer that question differently than I used to. So I'm, and so, so like, there's two different parts to it. So the first is the executive functioning part. So again, this idea of these brain-based thought processes that are going all the time. So impulsivity challenges would mean that you don't have the brakes. It's sort of, you know, it's, you don't have the ability to stop that impulse that of doing something that may not be appropriate in the situation. So that's one piece to it. And then the other is the fact, and this is coming from the newer brain science that I've learned through the Stuart Shanker stuff, is that that it actually, this that's a sign of being dysregulated, having a dysregulated system, which means that the nervous system is overloaded. And this is, again, where it's a different mindset of, of not just about behavior change, it's about a dysregulated nervous system that needs to be regulated. And it is a very different way to look at it. So there's both schools of thought. And I mean, and I think both apply, but when you look at it more about, again, just what's getting in the way of the impulse control, it's a whole, you have a whole lot more options to actually make a difference. Because unfortunately, if you just look at, okay, we need just behavior management ways to stop the impulse, it unfortunately doesn't work all the time. Like, it may sometimes work, but not really, because you're not really getting to what's underlying the challenge.
Yeah, because it sounds like, you know, when we just look at behavior management, our typical response is either to reward behavior or consequences. You know, and so when you're dealing with that complexity, you know, sometimes, you know, as teachers say to us, I've ran out of ideas. You know, there's nothing more I can do. I've tried everything. And so I like the fact that the language is really changing with ADHD. And I think that's kind of where we were, you know, 10 years ago. We really looked at it from a behavioral perspective. Like, you know, these kids really, you know, if they were given limits, they should be able to manage themselves or regulate themselves. But now that we're putting the brain into the science of ADHD, you know, as you're mentioning, we're really learning that, you know, this isn't something that they do intentionally, and it's certainly not something that they can regulate, you know, from a good, bad perspective.
Yeah.
You know, we can't put boundaries and limitations on them and think, okay, that's good. They should be able to manage that. So I really like the fact that the language is really starting to translate into, you know, the nervous system, you know, the brain capacity, executive functioning, because those words, honestly, were never really tied to ADHD, 10 years ago.
And I think a lot of that has to do is they've only really started understanding, like it's only been maybe 20 years that they've even understood executive functioning. And then now more recently, we're moving even beyond that. Because at first it was sort of like, okay, yeah, executive functioning, the top part of your brain controls the bottom part of your brain. Mm-hmm. But now more recent science is saying that actually, no, like sometimes when you're in a if your nervous system thinks it's in survival mode, and that can be, it's not that you're, as you know, adults or any of us, we're not really in danger, but sort of like there are these things that make us react like we're in danger, for whatever reason. So then we're then in a survival mode where then your top brain cannot control. It is the bottom brain going to control. And so I think that's important understanding again to why, providing consequences and rewards isn't going to be enough. Because it really is a can't, not a won't. Mm-hmm. And that's a big difference.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, a little bit of adult. So maybe mm-hmm. we can just move into adult ADHD. Mm-hmm. How does that differ necessarily from child and adolescent? So maybe not diagnostically, but it probably looks different.
Yes.
And feels different.
Mm-hmm.
So an adult in the workplace who suffers with this, mm-hmm. maybe just kind of talk a little bit about what that would feel like and look like for them.
Yeah. It's been interesting getting to work and talk to more and more adults with ADHD, because it can look really different for so many different people. And it really is so much about the right fit. And I think the same can be said for kids. But yeah, when we're looking at adults, an adult that struggles with ADHD doesn't have likely the job or the work life or the home life or the lifestyle that fits his or her ADHD brain. Mm-hmm. And that's what's getting in the way. Because it's not really, it really isn't a bad brain. It's just a different brain.
Right.
And you can thrive with ADHD with the right circumstances. That's why there are so many famous actors and musicians and CEOs and lots of amazing people have ADHD. Mm-hmm. And so it's just when there's not a good fit, and that can be, again, like this idea of your system's overloaded. There's too many things that are stressing your system versus boosting yourself. Mm-hmm. And then that's what's getting in the way. And so it can look like poor motivation it can look like disorganization and not being competent and efficient with your job. But it really is about just sort of, potentially not having the right fit of work. And sometimes it's not that simple. Sometimes it's just about maybe just the way they're doing it isn't the right fit for them. And they need help figuring out what's going to work for them, as well as empowering their strengths. So I often find when I'm working with adults, that's often where we start, with learning about ADHD and that they're not defective and that they're not this defective human, but it's that they have a different brain, and really helping them to understand their strengths and where they have probably shined in their life with their strengths, but not even really thought about it. Or, we all tend to look more at our challenges and the negative things. But that can be really helpful, because then, most people with ADHD, when you talk about them in their job, there's going to be something where it's like they do something different than other people that stands out in a good way, that, they do think differently. And so they figure stuff out in a different way, which is helpful. And sometimes people don't even really realize that, because they don't realize no one else can do that. But most people do, like, just the same way there's challenges, there's also these strengths that can make certain things work better. And so that's where, if you can get in the right fit for a job, you can really excel.
Right. And I guess that kind of leads into, we talk about a toolkit, having a toolkit to kind of work through. So as a coach, when you meet, I'm sure it's different when you meet with children and families as opposed to just an individual adult, but maybe you can walk us through, just a typical coaching session, what you would, I guess, talk to them about, and then just different tools that you may offer them as a coach.
And talking with adults?
Well, yeah, like I know it's different, right? It'll be different for kids than it would be for adults.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you can generalize that in any way, but what kind of a toolkit would you offer as a coach?
And it's funny, and that was language. I used that language more before. I have to say, I don't use necessarily the toolkit language as much anymore. I mean, there is sort of still this idea of a toolkit, but now there's so much more to it. It's not just strategies. It's, I mean, I guess if you can consider information's a tool, and just even a different mindset's a tool. So I guess, yeah, so I guess that still can be a toolkit. But I know sometimes people think, oh, I'm going to have all this list of strategies, and it's again not that simple. But I can just briefly say, like, say when I'm working with families, it's a lot of working with the parents as well. Like, whether I'm doing the sessions remotely or in person, I really, it's a, I'm not just working with the child. I'm also working with the parent to help them understand, what we're talking about. So the conversations can continue outside of our sessions with that language around brain fuel, or talking about different stressors getting in the way, and even talking about different tools. And so, and it really is, again, quite individual. Like, I'm working with both. I'm trying, with the child and the teen, we're figuring out focus tools, because to even keep your focus during a session, we have to figure those things out. We're talking about different things. We may be drawing different things. But yeah, it's just about, understanding sort of the brain, understanding ADHD, and then understanding for that person, what is it that they need for boosting their brain fuel, and what do they need, and what things are getting in the way, and then trying to figure out maybe different strategies or different plans of doing things that can make a difference, because that can make all a huge difference. And then with an adult, similar idea, except we get, of course, with adults, there's so much more complexity around values. We're talking about, often it can be with adults with ADHD, is that they have so many unmet needs of things, of struggling for so long, that they're not living a life that's fits with their values. And so coaching, that's a big part of coaching in general, whether it's ADHD coaching or not. But with people with ADHD, it's then really helping them understand their ADHD, figuring out what they need day to day to boost their fuel, what's getting in their way, what can things can they change, and really help them to make some shifts so they can be living a life that does align with their values, and hopefully helps them really use all their ADHD strengths so they can thrive, not just survive through life, right?
That's
To
right.
really, really feel like they have the life that they want.
So how many adults do you think go undiagnosed? Like, I'm just curious what that would look like.
Well, I mean, the last statistic I had heard is that 75% of adults with ADHD don't even know they have it. And I think that comes from a lot of people who are adults now could get through school okay, the way the world was kind of back then. It was a lot easier to it didn't really stand out, because again, it's just about the fit. It's not really a problem unless you're struggling. You have the still the same brain the whole time. And so, yeah, and so it tends to be a lot of times that adults, when their kids are getting diagnosed, then they're like, oh, that sounds a lot like me, or different other things that are coming up. But yeah, it's just, we now live in a world that's, I mean, really not ADHD friendly. So it's just, it's not easy. That's the idea. There are so many different things that can drain you, and it can be quite exhausting, because things aren't set up well for the ADHD brain, whether it's a school system or a classroom or a workplace, right? So then it really is up to each person to figure out what do they need, and then, be able to kind of get what they need. And the nice thing is, like, when we look at things like schools, I mean, they're getting better and things like that, in terms of all of, there's more options and things like that. And from what I hear too, I think the same for workplaces. But yeah, I think, and it's actually almost sad, the more and more I often will hear a story of stories from adults who just get diagnosed, let's say in their adulthood, and then it's not that necessarily, unfortunately, that a professional told them they had ADHD. It'll be they heard a podcast, or they read an article I'm like, and they thought, well, that sounds like me. It's like they're figuring it out, they're coming across it on their own. And unfortunately, that's because unless somebody really has done a lot of training in ADHD, they may not fully understand it enough to recognize it. Like, a lot of adults have anxiety or depression for years when it's actually ADHD
That's
that's
right.
undiagnosed. And if
Yes.
the people they're working with don't know enough about ADHD, then that won't. But I mean, but again, I think it's improving, and I think there are more and more professionals picking that up too. But again, this is sort of the bigger issue.
Yeah, and I certainly am seeing it in my private practice. Mm-hmm. You know, I have more and more adults now, you know, coming to see me to talk about the impact of being diagnosed as an adult.
Yeah.
You know, because now they're looking back at their childhood.
Yeah.
And a lot of them had traumatic events, you know, whether it was family related or school, you know. Right. And of course, back then, again, I think, you know, just it was really talked about as behavior.
Yeah.
You know, so, or the fact that they weren't intelligent, they weren't really smart.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of adults are really, you know, they're almost mourning their childhood because if they only would have known, you know, what would have changed for them.
Right.
You know, would their childhood have been full of, you know, more self-worth or self-confidence, you know. But I always tell all the adults that I'm working with, you know, I think in that moment when they feel so impacted by it, they see it as a curse maybe, you know, and I always say, I see it as a blessing, right? And to be empowered, you know, moving forward, knowing, right? There's power in knowing.
Yeah.
And I always say, you know, we can't go a minute back and we can't go a minute ahead. But for adults to feel empowered now that they know and that there's resources such as yourself out there that can really help them move through that, you know, so they start to feel much more self-aware and mindful of what their ADHD looks like. But again, just to have the strategies in place to monitor themselves, you know? So I think, you know, that's why I asked you about the number, because I was curious about that. Like, how many people are walking around, you know, thinking they're depressed or anxious when really ADHD is at the bottom of that? So I guess, you know, thinking about, well, more and more, I think, for you anyways, and just having to have the opportunity to work with you and around you, you know, I know how passionate you are about this work. And I kind of mentioned, you know, I think a lot of people see this diagnosis sometimes as a curse and not a blessing, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe you can just talk a little bit about, you know, what are the benefits to ADHD?
Yeah.
You know, and to empower our listeners to know that, that there's lots. But what do you see? Or what do you tell people in your coaching sessions? How do you empower them?
Yeah, well, and I often find it's often helping the parents too, because there's so much stigma, unfortunately, still. And again, I think it has to do with the name and just still lots of the lingering information out there that's not helpful, that people, you know, even, you know, parents will think, oh my gosh, like, you know, that they don't want their child diagnosed with that. But yeah, so it's so important to demystify that it isn't anything to be ashamed of. It really isn't a defective brain. It's just a different brain. And so the strengths, there's so many, and often they're the flip side of the ADHD challenge. So if you think about, let's say, impulsivity, the flip side of that coin is being, you know, very energetic. You know, you just have all this energy, and it could be physical if you're just very, you know, physically impulsive. But if you're mentally impulsive or verbally impulsive, that can be a great strength, right? Just there's just so much, you know, so much great thinking, creativity, thinking outside of the box. You're not, you know, that brain that's kind of going in all directions will make links that people without ADHD don't see. I almost think about it like non-linear thinking, with the idea of linear thinking just being a step by step. Like, to me, that's, again, the non-ADHD person thinking about completing something in a step-by-step way and using executive functioning skills to help them. I see the flip side of that being the nonlinear thinking, being that that's hard. However, rather than having to think step-by-step-by-step in, like, let's say a little like a map, it's almost like more like a web. So then, you know, based on that person's thinking going off in a web, all of a sudden, like, they see these joint connections that the linear thinker couldn't see. They would have had to go a lot more steps to have gone there.
Yeah. kind of like a, you know, as you're talking, the picture that comes to mind for me is almost like an artist, right? You know, so they put their canvas up and they, you know, they obviously have something in mind that they want to create, but you know, they don't just, you know, take one color. They bring all colors onto the canvas and create the outcome. And it almost sounds like an ADHD brain really kind of thinks of, you know, how do I put this canvas together with all of these ideas, you know, versus just very strategically, you know, going through A, B, C, D, E. You know, they're able to just kind of paint a different picture, that you and I might not see, right?
Absolutely. And yeah, and that's where, I mean, a lot of artists do have ADHD and musicians, because there is sort of this creative artistic mode. But then there also can be this problem solving. So that's sort of what there can be the strength of a lot of people with ADHD, that webbed nonlinear thinking can make certain kinds of problem solving really easy. And this is where, again, you might see a difference that, especially like from what I know about ADHD, it's that when if you're in a situation where you have to figure out a solution, that's sort of where this nonlinear these ideas come out of nowhere, it seems, but it is just this different thinking. And then the people without ADHD are like, how did you even think about that? And that's, again, can work really well in workplace kind of things, is that there can be just a certain need for that. So definitely the creativity, the problem solving. And also, I like to talk about this idea of empathy. Most people I know with ADHD are very sensitive, empathetic people. And I think there can be different reasons for that. Part is just the struggle of, you know, you understand what struggle's like. But I also think it could even go deeper than that. I think, you know, we do have, I think, maybe a more sensitive nervous system that is more easily impacted by so many things. And I think, yeah, we pick up on other people's emotions as well and things like that. So that can be a great strength. And we tend to be very passionate. And so that is, like, you know, can be very excited and about certain things and very loving, but then can also get very frustrated, right? And very angry too, but that's passionate, right? So again, like, it all kind of goes together. I mean, you know, and that's where I like to help everyone kind of see that where the strengths lie. You know, it can be challenges on some days in certain situations,
Right, of
but it's
course.
a strength overall too, right? And then it's about the more you know about your own self and your ADHD and what you need, the better able you can utilize those strengths.
So now that you're doing this ADHD coaching, you know, maybe just for our listeners, why would they seek you out? You know, so what would coaching offer them if after listening to this podcast today, they're like, boy, like now that I'm hearing this discussion, I think maybe I have some of those traits, or you know, I've always been going about managing my ADHD, you know, in this linear way. So how could you know, be helpful to the ADHD, you know, family who's dealing with a child or an adolescent or an adult in the workplace?
Well, starting with the family then, that yeah, like, I find that the parents and the families that seek me out are the ones that you know, maybe they've learned a little bit, or they've been starting to try a little bit, or they just, you know, they're well aware of the different challenges, but they just don't know where to go next. And so, and like I said, I like to try and meet each family where they're at. And the first couple sessions are a lot about just figuring out, yeah, what do they know? What are their goals? What are they wanting? And then from there, building on understanding ADHD, understanding, like, let's say for the when there's, you know, the child or teen in the family, like, what are the factors that are getting in the way, and helping the parents to really see that these things are getting in the way, and that we really have to do the problem solving to figure out how do we reduce those things so they're not so much getting in the way. How do we boost them where they need to get boosted? And then and it can be that idea of a toolkit, like with information and a problem solving approach, different ideas to take day to day. Because the thing is too, I want to make sure I'm leaving the family at the end with a whole bunch of different ideas that they can now continue with through life to manage things day to day. And so that's where I just want to make, yeah, so it's, so I, it can look different. And that's where I like the coaching approach I bring in is very much then making sure that I'm following what the family's wanting. I'm making sure that it's their goals, their everyday kind of things that they can actually use. And that's what takes the time. I find with families, sometimes we may look at anywhere from 6 to 10 sessions, and then maybe they feel like they've got what they need. Or maybe we do some follow-up sessions as needed, or and some families like to continue longer, and that's, again, too, it's very individual from what each family wants and needs. And then with an adult, you know, sometimes that can go long term. Like, some adults find it really helpful to have coaching for years, and that's great, but it doesn't have to be that. It can be, we usually recommend at least 3 months to really give it a good go. And some adults find that that gives them what they need. They come out understanding ADHD and having some ideas, or maybe sometimes they find after 3 months we're doing it less frequently. But again, it all depends on what they're wanting to get out of the coaching. Very much with adults, it's their goals. They're coming to the session. You know, there's an expectation they're coming to the session with something in mind to talk about. It's really not led by me, that they have their goals. They're bringing a focus. I'm helping them to kind of unpack that and decide what they want to talk about. But I'm really making sure I'm asking them, what do you want to get out of this session? And then building on all the things we've been working on each session, helping them understand their strengths, helping them understand what their ADHD looks like, what do they need, and how do they get to that more values-driven life that they want, or a life where they feel like that they're getting what they want out of life. So, so that's what I think I've always been like that, but I think more and more I'm getting to so individualized. I just want to make sure each client is getting what they need, because it is a partnership. Mm-hmm. It's something that I'm here to help them with their journey, and I really like to think about it like that, that each family or individual with ADHD has a journey ahead of them, and it takes time, and it's sort of each piece kind of unfolds as they go. Cause they, you may get a good handle on things, but then something changes and then they need a little bit of help again.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. And really, you know, it's a life process.
It is.
You know,
yeah.
So, you know, if you're dealing with it in childhood or adolescence or adulthood, and again, as we, you know, the science behind this, and just what we're learning about the brain, you know, we're moving at such fast paces now, just in terms of understanding everything that this beautiful organ does, right? You know, our brains are so fascinating. You know, but I think, you know, as I like to say, and really at Supporting Wellness, Psychological and Family Services, our whole vision really is about wellness, not, you know, we talked about ADHD today as a diagnosis, because it is, right? But it's all about the wellness piece, right? Striving to be the better you. And I think just, you know, having the joy in working with you, that's something that you always do with your clients. You know, you're always letting them know that they can strive, you know, to change a couple of things and see the impact of that, you know, that they're not defined by this diagnosis. That's a journey. We're constantly evolving and changing and coming across different struggles, you know, or celebrating gains. And with ADHD, you know, that's how it is. You know, sometimes it can be, you know, our road to success, because we have so much creativity and there's so much that goes with that. But sometimes when the time really counts and we can't focus in, you know, it might be a disability in some sense. But I think at the end of the day, the whole focus is really just to let every individual know that it's just one thing that they can improve in their lives. They don't need to stay at this place of feeling at a disadvantage.
And that's one thing I really like about the Supporting Wellness overall mandate and mission. It is about wellness and well-being, and that's where I feel like definitely my approach is about helping each person even define what that means for them and to take those steps to get there.
So if you were to just give one I guess one, if you wanted your listeners to hear one thing and take one thing away today, what would that be?
Yeah, I think it would be that probably the big one will be that the ADHD person, is never making a conscious choice to be struggling. I really believe that there are things getting in the way, and it's and like I said, it's such a tricky thing to tease out even for the person themselves, but it is so much about let's figure out what's getting in the way and let's do what we can to shift that, because that just can make all the difference.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. I know just in private practice and just working with kids, adolescents, and adults, I think I'm most inspired by their resilience. Like when you actually talk to a child or an adolescent with ADHD, they have so much to share and tell you about this experience, right? And we learn from them. And when we put a voice to it, and when we find out what works for them, and again, kind of coming back to that why now, I just absolutely love that phrase. Most kids or adults will tell you why and the why now, but they may not know what to do with it, right? And so I think that's just what I'm always inspired about overall, is just the resilience of human beings. What we do to problem solve and better ourselves each and every day.
And I think that's a really important thing to think about with ADHD too, because whether you're an adult getting diagnosed as an adult or you're a child who was diagnosed and getting older, that I think there can be a great resilience in just having to adapt, right? Like so many things that people do can be maladaptive, but you're just trying to, recognizing that you were just trying to do what you needed to do, and things can shift so you don't have to. You can let go of some of those maladaptive things and really see just, give yourself credit for how well you have done. So yeah, I really like that as well, thinking about the resilience. And I think that can often get overlooked when you're just thinking about the challenges. And then yeah, and then with the Stuart Shanker's why now, one thing I have found too, the more I use that approach though, is that sometimes there are some whys you didn't even think of.
For
You can
sure.
get deeper into it. So that's what I'm really liking too, and that's an approach I think I'll just always now be using for myself as well as with my clients, because there is just so much you can do with something like that long term.
So with your coaching, you do online coaching, right?
Yeah.
So people can access you that way as well. It doesn't have to be meet in person.
Yeah, no, and that's what's been great. Like a lot of coaching is done that way, so it's been it's I find with adults it can be great just having that video chat and things like that, but the OT world now is really expanding in terms of its use of the video as well too, so that people can be accessing services when they don't live in the same city. Yeah, and I find it is looking a little bit different, but same ideas that I'm talking a lot to the parent, I'm bringing information in for the child, I may just be more giving some ideas and direction for them to be doing versus me demonstrating it physically. But in some ways I think that can be really effective, because then they're the ones that are just kind of doing it and seeing what's going to work for them, or I'm having them pull out some of the things they already have in their house. And so yeah, I'm finding that it's just as effective, and it's nice to be able to help people who are in different cities.
And I think that's the beautiful part about technology now. Wellness just isn't about coming to an office space and seeing someone, that you can have wellness through online counseling and reach people, in so many different platforms now. So that's great. Well, this has been, a great time for me, just again, to reflect on just all the opportunities that we can see in the coaching piece of ADHD, as well as the occupational therapist, the part, right? Just really understanding the sensory piece and that self-regulation. So I hope that, this time for our listeners has been a great opportunity. Just to, understand ADHD is changing and evolving. We're certainly, treating it and looking at it very differently now. You know, even though we use medications, you know, that's one piece, but there's many different pieces to the puzzle that can really impact and help the individual work through this process. So I guess, you know, just for our listeners, again, I think I've said a couple of times, you know, how fortunate I've been in having to work with Krista over many years in many different ways. I've worked with her one-on-one in our schools here in Calgary. I've also watched Krista present on ADHD and just really inform communities, teachers, educators, about what really is going on in our growth and expansion of knowledge in the ADHD arena. As well, Krista works here at Supporting Wellness, Psychological and Family Services. And if you want to reach her, you can email her at krista@supportingwellness.com, or you can call. And if you have any further questions or you want to inquire on any level, I can assure you that Krista is more than willing to take your questions either by email or speak with you in person. And, you know, she's just a fabulous resource because she's passionate about what she does, and she propels to really know and know more and more about this area. And I think for me, you know, aligning with her just as a psychologist in private practice, I've learned so much about this area because of your passion, because you're always constantly sharing with me and with our group here just about what's going on. So you mentioned a couple of books, so I just wanted to put that out to our listeners. What would you say a good resource or a good book would be to purchase if listeners are wanting to purchase a book or information?
Yeah, you know, what I would say is, even, let me just start with some websites. Like, the there's a U.S. website that's Attitude. So I'll spell that. It's www.addidemag.com. So it's attitudemag.com, which has wonderful online articles and podcasts, and they even have a magazine. Dr. Russell Barkley, any of his books about ADHD are very good. And then, yeah, Dr. Stuart Shanker's work, even though he's not just talking ADHD, he's just got this great information around how do you do that problem solving around what's getting in the way. And so he's got a couple of books. The first one was Calm, Alert, and Learning, and his most recent one is Self-Reg something or other. His website has got all the information on it. And then actually in Calgary too, there's a good website that's ADHDfamilies.ca. But I mean, I think anybody, even people outside of Calgary, would probably find it helpful. There's lots of great ADHD information on that website too.
Well, I want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you too.
It's been great. And I guess just for our listeners, we're starting these podcasts, and our practice is called Supporting Wellness, Psychological and Family Services. We are based out of Calgary, Alberta, but we do offer online counseling if that's of interest. So you can go to our website, www.supportingwellness.com. And again, if you wanted to email any one of us or see anything more about the services that we offer here, we pride ourselves in just really wanting to break down the stigma of mental health. And really look at this as wellness in whole. So we're a diverse group here at Supporting Wellness, where it's not just psychologists. We have a massage therapist, we have acupuncture, we have an occupational therapist, we have speech, we also have psychoeducational assessment, and just many psychologists who specialize in many different arenas. So I would just suggest checking out our website again, www.supportingwellness.com, and you'll find any of the information that you need there. So I just want to thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope that it's been, you know, interesting and valuable for those listeners who find us. And we hope that you have a fabulous weekend, and check us out. We'll be doing podcasts every month in all of our different areas of specialty. So thanks for listening.